Yeah, he's all, he likes this now.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened. Yeah, he fed me.
The other guy that wanted to do Dan Proudman. He has a lot of experience in designing city engineers, designing water. He worked also for PG&E of gas, just gas pipelines. He's pretty sharp. He seems like a nice guy. It'd be nice to have somebody that wasn't, didn't have any water background though, just for a little.
So, who else besides Jay is not coming back?
Mark Waltering.
Oh.
In person. Mark and Mark and Jay. That's it.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We always start the meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance. The flag is over there. Before we do that, a couple of days ago was the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And I ask you to think about that. You know, I think we say the pledge because we learned it in grammar school. We've long forgotten the first two words of the pledge are not, I pledge. But you ask anybody that's in the fourth grade or third grade, the first two words are ready, begin. Now, we've all forgotten that. But what we should not forget is the price that was paid on June 6, 1944, that allows us to do what we are about to do. So would you please rise and join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Before we get into the crux of the meeting, I have some housekeeping things I must do. One is we got a couple of complaints during the winter about the water company's snow plowing service. And we were covering up some driveways when the plow would come down the street and the owners were distressed, and we said we'd be happy to take care of it for you. We don't have a snow plow. So I think you can figure out the rest. When you came in this morning, there were a couple of documents. One looks like this. It's on the table over here. And it's asking if you please share with us your email address. Now, I know a couple people expressed some concern about what do we do when we gather them. We create an email bank. We don't share the bank with anyone. I want to stress that. We want to get your email address because this morning you're going to hear about the new billing process that's going in 2020, and it's all driven by electronic processing. And to that end, there's a small survey. It's also on the table over there. Does not require who you are, but it does require that you fill it out. And it just asks some simple questions. How would you like to receive your invoice, either through the mail or through email? If we offer electronic options, would you use them? And it lists some of the options that we offer. One is bill pay. A lot of you are familiar with that. You may pay currently for other parts of your own household business automatically out of your checking account or a bank account. Banks call that bill pay. There's online payment systems and paying online by credit card. In the last, or a couple of the last newsletters that we've sent out, we said to you, you bring your questions and we'll bring the answers. And we have almost an equal number of people up here to answer questions that may come up. Everything from when are you going to be in my neighborhood? What's all that blue? Where'd all that blue pipe go? Point in the ground. How long is this going to take? Do you guys remove trees? Yeah, there's all kinds of things that we're getting. So when that matter comes to you, please don't hold back. I will ask, however, as we do every year, that you kind of hang your questions to the end of the presentations, and we will stay as long as necessary. One of the other duties that I have to perform is that the Director of Elections is in Cooperstown, New York, enjoying the museum on baseball while his grandson plays in a baseball game there. Given that same choice, I wouldn't be standing here. And so I have to read to you, as he is the Director of Elections, in his absence, the following. A quorum is the minimum number of voting members necessary to properly conduct business. This number is calculated by subtracting the number of delinquent accounts we have from the total number of accounts, and that number equals 1,961. These are then people who are eligible to vote. You have to be a member in good standing in order to vote. 25% of the shareholders are in good standing or needed for a quorum. That means 491 and we have a quorum. The results are as follows. I'd like to congratulate Andy Rich. Andy was reelected. Bill Cover. Bill is right here. Stand up. Bill, thank you. And Dan Crosby. Thank you very much. As you can tell by the resounding applause, they're thrilled that you've been elected. Now, a quick introduction on some of the people on the board. One of the purposes of purposes of a meeting like this is for you to interact with them. Andy Rich, who has just been reelected, is the owner of a small firm that deals primarily in large and somewhat complicated businesses when they're struggling. That's the best way. Now, that doesn't mean that we're a large business or a small business struggling, but he has incredible expertise in getting the job done, especially when it comes to organizational issues. This is his second term on the board, and he's been worth the gold to us. Jeff Jones, I can go through this on your right and my immediate left, but I always get that a little confusing, so we'll just point. Jeff Jones spent his entire career in water conservation, not just here in the United States, but in countries as far out as Saudi Arabia. He's also worked with East Bay Mud and Contra Costa County Water District. He brings a water background, and we need some of that. Sharon Tobias is not here this morning. She's in the city of Paris. Wouldn't we all? She has over 27 years as a professional civil engineer. She speaks a language that few of us understand, but the engineers do. And she's been a great value to us. Paul Penny is in Cooperstown. He also comes from a water background, having worked with the Santa Clara Water District. We have two board members that are vacating this morning. Mark Waltering, I don't know if he made it. I haven't seen him. But we want to thank him. He came in at the last minute and helped us out. And Jay Bretthauer. Jay's a retired, high school teacher. History?
Middle school, elementary.
That was close.
Math and science.
Math and science. History and science, yeah. Yeah, I do know him well, and thanks for the research. And I'd like to introduce, I want to thank Jay before we leave. He's also leaving the board, and I want to thank him for his service. And thank you.
Definitely.
Two new elected board members, William or Bill Cover. Here it says he's a scientist. Congratulations. Has quite a background on water purification systems. Dan Crosby, recently retired, working for Contra Costa Water and East Bay Mud. So you see from the pieces of the board that not everybody has a water background, which is good, because we don't need seven people, men and women, all thinking the same and nodding their heads up and down. Not all of us come from a water industry. My background is in managing human behavior.
Okay.
I spent 40 years in law enforcement. We invited Chief Mike Johnson, who couldn't make it this morning, and Aaron is here pinch-hitting for him. Aaron is from the Evis Pass Fire District. Well, I want to thank you for coming, Aaron. And Aaron got the job because I worked as a chief. I don't know what it's like. And the chief looks around and says, Aaron, it's your turn. It's Saturday. Go wow. Evis Pass is thrilled, and so are we. And on that second map right there, it's not readily apparent to you from where you're sitting, but those are the 83 additional fire hydrants we're putting in. Now, that would thrill any fire department.
It does, thank you.
Yeah, and then you wonder, why haven't they been there before? That's a good question. We don't have much control over the past, but we can sure influence the future. Marita Calloway is here. She's the County Supervisor from District 3. Marita, thank you for coming this morning. And Marita is here to take care of everyone's ills and questions and just full of answers. Is Bertha here? Did make it, okay. Michael Minkler. Michael Minkler was our counsel for a decade or so, or perhaps longer, and some months ago was appointed as the Chief Executive Officer of the Calaveras County Water District, and we're very proud of that and very proud of him. So with all that, I need a motion to, as we have to have this for the record, to accept the minutes from last year's meeting, which none of us have. Yeah, trust me on this. Moved. A second, please. Second, thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, and I wish you pass, say no. Thank you. Golly, we got that out of the way. What are you going to hear this morning? We have a series. There are two or three presenters. Dave Hicks will be here in a moment. He's the general manager of the water company, to introduce the staff and give you a little heads up on where we are and how the program is going. Mark Franz, who's sitting at the table and will be introduced in a moment, is the contractor superintendent for the project. Now, if you have any question about the project or its intricacies or where things are going to go or how long it's going to take, he's the guy. And he will follow Tom Schneider. Tom, as you know, has worked with us for over a decade. He's the chair of the Long Range Planning Committee. They are our strategic planning group. I said a few minutes ago, and some suggest that we're not a group of historians. We don't dwell a lot on the past. We're more curious about where we're going than where we've been. And Tom and his flying squad is going to get us there. So with that, please welcome Dave Hicks.
I'm Dave Hicks, if you don't know me, and I've been here for 32 years with the water company, 6 as a manager. It's already been a year since the last time I've been here, and I've done a lot of work. And I'd like to introduce some of the people that Bob didn't introduce, who keep the company running. First, we have Lee Schmid. She is the administrative operations manager. She deserves that. She's been with the company for 10 years, and she's a perfectionist, I'll tell you that. Keeps the office running smooth as heck. We have Carissa Schlott, who is our accounts manager. She been with the company for 2 years. Carissa is the person you'll probably get when you call the office. She handles complaints, water outages, notifications, meter readings, billing, among other things. Ethan Rector is one of our field staff. He's the guy that's out there in the field, along with two other guys, Bill and Tyler. They're not here today, but Ethan has his grade 2 distribution and water treatment certifications from the state. He's very knowledgeable and will help you with any water problem you have. There's somebody on call every day of the week. If you have a problem, a water problem, or see a leak, anything, just call our emergency number, which is, I can tell it, 795-7030, and he'll get the message, or one of the other guys will, and they will come out and help you. And we have Andrew Ramos, he's our new attorney. He's replacing Michael Minkler, who was just talked about a minute ago, who's now general manager of CCWD. Andrew comes highly recommended by Michael and is experienced in water issues, very experienced, and stepped right into the role seamlessly in that. Tom Schneider's already been introduced. He's the long-range committee chair, but he's been, you know, they're working on a new rate structure. They're working on asset management plan, and Tom's been on the board as treasurer. And, of course, he sold his house, which means he can't be on the board anymore. But he's stuck on to help us finish the project, and his help has been invaluable. Aaron is here from the fire department, and we're working with them on locations of hydrants, and glad to have him here. Well, Marita's here. We already introduced her. Okay. We have also John Pedry from MC Engineering over there. He has designed the project. He's project manager for us. He coordinates all aspects of the project. He has a lot of experience, many years of experience in this type of work. He handles project payment, progress payments, change orders, directs all work on pipeline and service locations. And he is the guy, if you have any questions about the project, he is the guy that would have the answers for you. Rich Ralea, next to John over there. He's an engineer for MC Engineering. He also worked on the service box locations and mapping. And also we have, from Mazingo Construction, we have Jeff Graham. He's project manager for Mazingo for this project. Mark has already been introduced over there. He's the superintendent. Brad Lester is next to him. He is the project engineer on this project. So I think I covered everybody.
Yep.
And it. So from now we're going to have Bob come back and talk about the... Oh, no, he did the voting. Oh, we're done. Okay. Okay, what's next on this thing? Yeah, Bob, voting results. Okay. Oh, yeah, President's Report. Bob will be back.
Actually, the President's Report is more of what you're going to hear from others. Tom is going to explain to you on 1-1-2020, which is not that far away, the Water County will be introducing a new billing system. You'll be billed every other month. Every 2 months. 6 times a year. That's the standard practice in most water companies, unless you're from the city of Brentwood, and they bill monthly, I understand. So the first water bill you'll receive is in March, early part of March, and it'll be reflective of 2 months of service and whatever consumption you use. The new billing system is driven by consumption. current billing system is driven by your participation. And you don't pay for the amount of water unless you use an exceptional amount and you're on a meter and you exceed the baseline. Tom and Long Range have spent the last 2 or 3 years studying baselines and water usage. And in a few months, and is in the process now, in fact, of rolling out a new billing package. The billing will have two readings. One is a base rate, and if you've ever been a customer of a water company anywhere, you've paid that before. And the base rate is the same for all of us. Included in the base rate, and Tom will explain this, is our payback interest to the U.S. Department of Agriculture for the $12.3 million loan that is paid for the project. So the base rate is not going to increase. It's going to include it. Because in the years to come, our construction demand cost will drop because the system is currently being improved. And just for what it's worth, two comments on the improvements. One of our board members realized that a hydrant has now been installed on his street. And in an excited moment, he called his insurance company. And they cut his insurance. Didn't cut him out.
Right.
They reduced his payment. And he also told us, because he's one of the water background, this piping we're putting in the ground should last from 80 to 120 years. And as I look around the room, well... I just say we won't be doing this twice. So without further ado, let me reintroduce you and thank him once more for all the work he's done. Tom Schneider.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I have several topics that I'd like to discuss this morning. Try to work through them as quickly as I can and hopefully not bore you too much. There's going to be a lot of data, a lot of facts that I talk about. And as we have in the past, this whole document will be posted on our website. So if you have any questions later, please go to the website, read through it, and let us know if you have any questions or comments. The first thing I'd like to do is just remind everybody what the role of the Long Range Planning Committee is and introduce the members. Two are here, Andy Rich and Jeff Jones, and two cannot make it. Bob mentioned that Sharon Tobias is in Paris, and Joe Morgan couldn't make it. So we have a total of five members. Joe Morgan and I aren't on the board, so two of the members are not board members. So the charter of the Long Range Committee is to serve as an advisory committee to the board, providing ongoing recommendations for long-term water management strategies. We bring those recommendations to the board for a vote. So it's the board's ultimate decision on whether or not we move forward with the recommendations that we propose. Over the last year, the Long Range Planning Committee's focus has been on providing additional support to Dave and his staff on support of the USDA project, ongoing analysis for our long-term cash flow, implementing a formal process for managing reserves, a long-term asset management plan, which includes developing a formal asset management plan that we're pretty far along on right now, and performing analysis of meter usage studies and our future rate structure. So as far as financial planning and cash flow, at the time of our annual meeting last June, the long-range committee was in the process of formulating a recommended cash flow analysis for 2018 through 2021 for the board's consideration. This analysis provides a multi-year forecast of revenues, expenses, and reserves, including factoring in the USDA loan and interim financing, along with a suggested rate structure approach. Our cash flow analysis last June was based on receiving USDA reimbursements for accumulated costs from 2017 through 2018 for the MC engineering work and for the Blue Lake Springs Mutual Water Company costs at the start of construction, which was back in September of last year, and also reimbursing us for all the costs going forward. Based on that original reimbursement plan, the loan interest through the construction span was estimated at $452,000. In November 2018, the board made a decision to continue holding off on those USDA reimbursements for MC Engineering and for the Blue Lake Springs internal costs until 2020, assuming that our financials could handle it. So far in 2019, the financials are in good shape, and the interim loan interest with this change is estimated to decrease from $452,000 down to $336,000, a savings of $116,000 or 27%. The USDA reimbursements in 2020, as we complete the construction project, will put our financials and reserves in a very strong position. There are a few other areas that are being analyzed to determine impacts on cash flow. Meter installs. As meters get installed, the base rate changes from a non-metered rate to a metered rate. So that has to be taken into account in our cash flow. Future rate structure changes are under consideration. Implementing the shareholder service line replacement loan program and transitioning to a new bi-monthly electronic billing and payment process, as Bob mentioned. I'll discuss those later in the project, in the presentation, but those also have an impact on cash flow. We also have some new scope that has been recommended by Dave and his staff to be considered for the USDA project. The additional scope items address safety, fire flow, and liability tasks that were not requested in the USDA preliminary engineering report and therefore not included in our current contract. The new scope items have been reviewed with the board several times and they're currently under consideration. The board has approved proceeding forward with the highest priority items. So we're currently working on the engineering drawings for those, and we'll move forward from there. Besides the new scope cost, we have to take into account the impacts of additional interim loan interest based on an expected extended schedule. As we proceed forward through the USDA construction contract, we will continue to analyze the cost and schedule performance and decide which of these additional scope items to run by the board for approval. Next topic is reserves fund policy and operating procedure. As mentioned last year, in our annual audit from Atherton and Associates, they noted that we had a capital reserve control deficiency and recommended that we establish a capital reserves policy. The Long Range Planning Committee was tasked by the board in July of last year to formulate a formal reserves fund policy. We presented a draft of that policy in October. The reserves fund policy is comprised of the following fund categories and target minimums. There are a few restricted reserve funds. Two are USDA requirements, a debt reserve of $44,000 per year, and a short-term asset reserve that maintains a $40,000 balance. We also have another restricted fund that is our emergency fund reserve, funded at $100,000. Non-restricted reserves are capital asset reserve funds at $346,000 and operating reserve funds at $272,000. In total, all those reserves have a total target amount of approximately $800,000. Those will be reviewed and approved each year by the board during our annual budgeting process. Each fund has strict guidelines on the use and authority, monitoring, and reporting. In addition to the reserves fund policy, a reserves fund operating procedure was requested by the board in October of last year. A draft was presented in November. The reserves fund operating procedure is more concise than the policy and provides day-to-day guidance and direction to Dave and his staff. The policy and the operating procedure documents were reviewed and approved in December of last year. Asset management plan. We received an initial proposal from MC Engineering in August of last year. The asset management plan is intended to provide the basis for developing the capital assets reserve fund that was requested in the audit, and it's a component of the reserves policy. As an initial target minimum, that capital asset reserve fund of $346,000 was calculated based on an amount that is 5% of our unrestricted net assets. As we finalize the asset management plan with MC Engineering, this reserve fund will be reviewed and adjusted as needed. To date, in the asset management plan tasks that have been going on, we're at the point of completing GIS mapping and an asset inventory database. Ultimately, the GIS database will interface with the asset management database. I went through a demo with John about a week or so ago, and it's pretty impressive how precisely the database can locate and identify all of our assets, as well as provide a description of each, what connecting assets each is tied to, the age of each asset, and the failure or repair history. The asset inventory database was the first critical step in constructing the final asset management plan. The database list all the assets that we have, where each asset is located, the current value of each asset, the year of installation, typical useful life, remaining life, and estimated cost to replace each asset. The next phase of the plan in finalizing the asset management plan will focus on arriving at the most cost-effective maintenance, repair, and replacement strategy possible. It will document all of our objectives, priorities, and the affordability plan. It will also take into account our reserves policy and our O&M operating budgets and make sure that we're not overlapping in any way with our asset management plan. We estimate completing that plan and reviewing with board in July. Meter usage studies. The Long Range Planning Committee has been performing meter usage studies for 4 years. As everyone probably knows, if you have a meter, your current monthly allotment is 350 cubic feet per month. In 2016, based on total usage, the average usage per residence was 302 cubic feet. That wasn't based on our meter readings. That was all residents averaged 302 cubic feet a month. In 2017, Looking at total usage, the average per residence was 305 cubic feet a month. So it only changed 3 cubic feet per month from 2016 to 2017. In 2017, based on our meter readings, which was a sample size of 461, the average per residence was 309. So you can see our meter readings at 309 were not very far off from total usage of all residents at 305. In 2018, the total usage average per residence went down to 275 cubic feet a month. Our meter readings, sample size grew to 605, was an average of 288 cubic feet. So again, it was pretty close to the total usage. Through March of 2019, our total usage per residence is at 301. So you can see over several years, it's the total usage and usage on our meter readings is right around 300 cubic feet a month, and the allotment is 350 cubic feet per month. A few interesting details to point out in 2017 and 2018 study data. Over 75% of the readings on our meters for both years were under 350 cubic feet per month. Those 75% that were below the 350 are only using 25% of our water. For both years, approximately 10% of the readings are above two times the 350 cubic feet allotment. Those 10% are consuming about 50% of the water. The 2018 average usage for warm and dry summer months in 2018 was 400 cubic feet. In the cooler, wet months, it dropped to 222 cubic feet. Through September 2018, the annual average was about the same as 2017 at 309. However, for some reason, in October through December of last year, the average was 41 cubic feet lower than 2017, which dropped the average down to the 288 that I mentioned. For 2019, we now have 819 meters installed. 48% of our 1,708 connections. Those 819 and growing will provide us a much greater sample size as we continue the study. We will continue to compile and analyze meter usage and trends while the remaining meters are installed. Now a little discussion on water rate structure design. Over the next few months, a major focus of the Long Range Planning Committee will be to arrive at a recommended rate structure for 2020 and beyond and propose it to the board. The ongoing long-range goal is to design a rate structure that supports our objectives. I mentioned these objectives last year and probably the year before that. They haven't changed. We want to select a rate structure that yields revenue in a stable and predictable manner, rate structure that funds all of our costs, including adequate reserves, promotes conservation, and maintains simplicity while promoting fairness and equity. The basic components of the rate structure, as Bob mentioned, will still include the base rate and consumptive charges or usage rates. At the completion of the USDA construction project, the USDA loan surcharges will be added into the base rates. So that's expected to be around mid-year 2020. As I mentioned, the usage data will be reviewed periodically to determine if any adjustments to the rate structure, base allotment, or usage fees need to be considered. The Long Range Planning Committee will also review the level of base rate fees that are charged in each category. So the metered residents, the non-metered residents, bare lots, and combined lots. We're going to continue to look at those base rates to ensure that they are as fair and equitable as possible. Note that the income generated from base rates must ideally cover our annual operating fixed cost, which includes the maintenance of our entire infrastructure, providing water to every lot. All lots, including vacant lots, which include currently have a water service to the lot. As part of the USDA project, we are adding a new service box with a valve on all empty lots. In our rate structure planning, we must ensure that base rates provide stable and predictable revenue to cover a large percentage, if not 100%, of our fixed cost. We are planning a multi-tier usage rate structure with more aggressive consumption fees than the current $1.60 per 100 cubic foot rate over the base allotment in order to provide adequate revenue to meet or exceed our variable operating costs. A little info on the USDA loan repayment surcharges in our rate structure. The ultimate loan surcharge amount to shareholders will be dependent on the final USDA project cost. If our loan hits the cap, the annual loan repayment amount will be $437,000 per year. Based on the project estimated cost, the meters comprise about 12% of the project cost, and the infrastructure is about 88%. We are estimating that our USDA loan payments will start mid-2021, which is 1 year after the estimated construction completion date. It is estimated that loan surcharges will be added to the shareholder bimonthly billings in mid-2020 in order to accumulate the amount needed for that first USDA loan payment in mid-2021. As mentioned earlier, since 2017, we have delayed the reimbursement of USDA expenses for MC Engineering cost and Blue Lake Springs internal costs and covered them out of our operating budget. The amount of USDA costs that we've covered, in 2017, we covered 36%, or $513,000 of our annual costs. In 2018, we covered 42%, or $779,000 of our annual costs. In 2019, we're estimating to cover 43%, or $815,000 of our annual costs. All of these costs are reimbursable in 2020. Starting in 2020, the plan is to no longer cover USDA costs out of our operating budget. Since we've covered USDA costs for the past 3 years that exceed the amount of our USDA loan payment, the rate structure bottom line for base rates, including the loan surcharges, should not be impacted. Bimonthly electronic billing and payment. As Bob mentioned, a plan to move forward with a bi-monthly electronic billing and payment process starting in January 2020 is currently in the works. As everyone probably knows, currently you're billed on an annual basis and that payment is due by February 15th. You're also, if you have a meter, charged consumptive charges, billed, as I mentioned earlier, for those that have meters, $1.60 per 100 cubic feet for usage over the base allotment of 350 cubic feet a month. The proposed billing process, the base rates will be billed bimonthly in six equal installments based on the annual shareholder fee amount in place and the rate category. First payment will be for January and February, due in March, around mid-March, then every 2 months thereafter. Consumptive charges or usage rates will be billed bimonthly at the same time and in the same bill as the base rate, using the average rate structure that's in place at the time. Each bi-monthly bill will segregate charges for shareholders' base rate, consumptive charges based on meter usage, and a USDA loan repayment surcharge that will be included as part of the base rate. The Blue Lake Springs staff is currently reviewing information from several companies on the billing and payment service options that are offered, along with the fees charged for each service. From the information reviewed thus far, it's become apparent that cost of third-party services for electronic payments, credit cards, bank account e-payments can vary substantially. Based on this information, analysis will be performed over the next couple months to determine which services or software products must be purchased and performed externally versus which may be more cost-effective to perform internally by our staff. The goal will be to arrive at a solution that our office staff can reasonably maintain and is most financially affordable for shareholders and Blue Lake Springs Mutual Water Company. The last topic that I'll talk about are shareholder service line replacements. The Long Range Committee was tasked in January of 2019 by the board to review shareholder lateral service line replacement costs and provide our findings to the board. As communicated to the shareholders at prior meetings, the cost of new service lines from the meter box at the street to the house, since it's on the shareholder's property and not in the public right of way, cannot be funded through the USDA loan. Based on the long-range analysis, there are currently a total of 1,714 connections that will have meter boxes. Of those, 553, or 32% of the residents, have previously replaced and personally paid for their new service line. 976, or 57% of the residents, will be required to replace their service line once the new meter is installed as part of the USDA construction. Based on the estimated cost to replace the service lines and the potential USDA project budget risks and cash flow areas that still need to be analyzed over the next year or so, it was concluded by the Long Range Planning Committee that funding this from our operating budget and reserves would not be feasible. As a result, a zero-interest loan program limited to shareholders with financial hardships was recommended by the Long Range Planning Committee and adopted by the board in March of this year. A shareholder service line replacement program has been completed with a formal loan agreement and application that must be completed to apply. Based on the loan amount, the shareholder will have 2 to 5 years to repay that interest-free loan, and it will also be included within their bi-monthly bill. That concludes the topics I wanted to talk about today. I'd now like to introduce Mark Franz from Mazingo Construction to give you status on where they are.
Morning, everyone. As Tom said, my name is Mark Franz. I'm the superintendent for Mazingo Construction on the project. Little history on Mazingo. We are a local pipeline contractor, the owner of the company, born and raised in Suwamish County. It's been operating for close to 30 years now. I've been with him for 12 myself. That being said, the majority of our company is comprised of guys from Calaveras and Tuolumne County. So having the opportunity to be doing a job of this size in our backyard is pretty exciting for us. The guys you see out there every day in the orange vests and hard hats, they're all from here. Arnold, Avery, Murphy's, Vallecito. So they're very happy to be close to home, close to their families. Just to be here working and do you guys a good job. That being said, the project, we got started late last year, October of 18, and we had a couple of good months of construction before a long, very weather productive winter. It pushed us out for a few months. So we came back April of this year, and we've been hitting it hard. We're working 6 days a week to try to push this project as quickly as possible. And at this point, the numbers tell us that with the main lines of the project, we're about 45% complete. Services and appurtenances, which would be fire hydrants, ARVs, PRVs, and house services, we're roughly about 20% complete in the zone on the western side of Moran. We'll continue to keep working long days and 6 days a week and until we can get this thing going for you guys. I believe our approximate end date, we're shooting for sometime late June of 2020, if all goes well. I'm sure you guys have a lot of questions about construction process and things that are happening. So I'm going to step down. Bob will come back up and do a short Q&A session, and he will direct questions to the appropriate party. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. There's a lot of information in there, and I can promise you, tomorrow morning you brush your teeth, you're not going to think the same about the water you did when you got here this morning. The numbers that Tom talked about and the usage shows that conservation is still in place, and that's okay. While the snowpack this year was beyond description, and the rivers are overflowing and dams are releasing water, it's still okay to save water. And you're doing that, and I thank you for it. Among people I wanted to introduce was Mike McAtee. Mike is over here. He's the president of the Homeowners Association. Mike and I get letters frequently. He gets letters complaining about the water company. I get the letters complaining about the HOA. So we have a special relationship. And as you know, Mike recently fell off the roof, and he's bounced back, literally, bounced back quite nicely. And we're glad to have him. Believe me, glad to have him with us. A couple of homeowners have written to us about the conditions of the roads in Politic Springs. Well, the condition of the roads, as you well know, comes under the auspices of the county road department or county public works. And if you have complaints or issues about the roads, your remedy lies with them. Now, they have to prioritize well in advance of the work they're going to do, and they've already done that, I'm sure. If you've pursued that route and you got to be a loggerhead, or you're frustrated, or it's a sense you have things aren't quite working as well, then you get a hold of your supervisor. Her role is to facilitate the issues that come before you. Now, if you don't tell her, if you don't call her, if you don't interact with her, she's going to either have to guess or she'll listen to somebody else. And Marita is here. We thank her for coming here this morning. We did not invite her here so you can pounce on her. We did invite her here so you can see who she is, maybe get her business card, and call her as appropriate. We've heard a lot about what we're doing. This is a huge project, and you know, we've talked about it, and we don't want to overkill it with verbiage. So I'll just say that we're pleased with what the contractor is doing. We have the oversight from the engineers. We have our own inspectors. The county inspector is working with us. We got quite a rude awakening, as most of us did this last winter, when we had gully wash on some of the roads. It cleaned out. You've seen this gravel that's everywhere. In fact, you're probably tired of looking at it. That's a particular kind of gravel that is designed to compact to a certain degree on top of the pipeline. We don't dig a ditch and then put the dirt back in. The gravel is there for a reason, and the gravel seems to be everywhere. And if you notice it's disappearing, it's going in the ground. One of my neighbors said, what'd you do with the gravel? We put it in the ground. One more reminder on the email address. We need that. The little survey, it's on the same desk over there. In fact, the pencils are free. Take the pencil home with you. Fill this out and leave it. I want to emphasize the confidentiality of your email address. And if you're still not comfortable, we understand that. And or if you say, wait a minute, I don't want to deal with this electronic stuff. I don't like it. I don't have a computer. We will interact with you through the U.S. mail. So with that in mind, I'm happy to hear your questions. Sort of. Yes, sir.
Are you looking at me?
Well, I don't know if you're scratching the top of your head or raising your hand.
I'm bidding. No, so, hi, I'm Jack Podell. I'm a homeowner here for 27 years, and I'm in, 5-708. That's my number. So I don't know if this is a question or a comment. I have to commend Tom's presentation. It was absolutely great. Fantastic. I also have to say that the work that's going on right now, at least on my block, and Patricia, has been very impressive. The speed that these guys are working with, the consideration for me and whoever we are, has been fantastic. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
So here's the one comment that I have on the data collection, and as a homeowner, we have the water company, we've got the HOA, and it's separate from your perspective. From our perspective, it's all part of the cost of owning a home. It's one cost, right? So when you say something like, there was a year when water consumption went really down, well, that's because we were trying to conserve because of the drought and the beetle infestation and all that. When we plan for that kind of water usage and reduction, do we talk to the homeowners association and balance the cost of water against the cost of tree removal? Because we have much greater tree removal than any of the other subdivisions around here. I think everybody knows that. So that my question is, how do we, make it more holistic in that without interrupting the actual operations, which are very particular. That's it.
That's it.
That's no, okay. Question, comment, I don't know. But
no, it's very real. All of us are homeowners as well.
Yeah.
And we both pay the fees to the developer. But they are truly separate, as would be PG&E and the telephone company, although they both provide a service, and they both come into your home. I'm not sure. We work fairly closely, Mike and I, and their focus, the HOA's focus is more recreational and family, and ours has to do with brushing your teeth, so to speak. Utility services are a little bit different than some businesses, and we have certain restrictions and issues that we must adhere to, and authorities we have to answer to. We've worked closer together than we have in years past, I'll tell you that. Some of it's not readily apparent, but and when a conflict does arise, if there is one, and there have been a couple over this last year, we worked it out on a phone call. So it's, while we're separate and distinct, and we each have our own bylaws and our own charters and our own funding sources, there is some common bond.
So maybe I wasn't clear about my question, and help me clarify it, anybody, but what I saw was the fact that I was not allowed to water my trees. And my trees didn't die, but other people's trees did die. I would have happily paid an extra $1,000 to the water company in order to increase my water consumption. The county water department was telling people to go ahead and water as much as possible. The communication from our water company was that this is just a natural process, the trees are going to die anyhow. But the flyer that you sent out from the Department of Forestry said very plainly in the last paragraph that the cause of the beetle infestation was drought. So I guess I want to know how we can avoid that kind of... I think that's a problem. I think it's a problem for the water company as well as the HOA, which requires us to remove trees. And the cost of that is really a lot. Would have been a lot more, actually, than actually buying extra water, maybe from the county or wherever. So I'm not a water expert. I don't know about that, but it's a question that keeps coming.
Yeah, okay. The restrictions that we have on use of water parallel the requirements that we have from the state of California, Department of Water Resources. And we have to adhere to certain state rules. We did some research as best we could with UC Davis, and their departments having to do with forestry, and especially entomology, if that's the right one for bugs. Was there any value in, as we were told by some of our customers, if I leave a hose running 24/7 at the base of the tree, the bugs won't bother it? Well, we didn't argue that, but we couldn't find anything to support that. We couldn't find anything it was fairly implicit that if you soak and it would take an extensive soaking, that the bugs would pass and go to another tree. And when you're dealing with drought conditions, and we felt that we'll let nature take its course. And we'll have to bite the bullet because we want water for health services. And if it means losing a couple of trees, well, I feel badly, but that's going to happen.
I lost 23 trees on my lot.
Well, I don't want to sound like I'm belittling it at all. There's nothing that we could find or support the fact that massive watering would deter the bark beetle.
Well, Bob, also, until 2 years ago, 100% of our water came from wells. And our wells were under extraordinary stress because of the drought. So there was a very finite and dangerously low level of water available for just normal usage. Since then, we have engaged a contract with CCWD where approximately 35 to 40% of our water, you know, comes from them, which on any given day helps preserve the water that's available in our wells. But still, even today, you know, 60% or 75% of our water comes from wells. So that's probably the biggest reason why, yeah, we put a cap on watering trees during that drought period, because and Dave has the statistics, and I think we reported them in prior annual meetings, we're at a historic low. And I think those of you who have been members of the community for more than 3 or 4 or 5 years know that we spent a lot of time years ago looking for more wells, unsuccessfully.
I think you'd have to dig a hole and put the hose underneath to the roots to get the water in to beat the beetle. So most all the nutrients go up through the roots with the water. So if you have a drought and there's no water table, you can spray water on the tree all day, but it won't get inside the tree. So there's different schools of thought on that, but I'd have to go look it up. But so just spraying the tree itself, I don't think it would
get inside.
No. Yes, sir.
Two questions. One about the...
Could you stand, please, sir? We're going to hear you.
Two questions. One about the USDA loan. How long is that for? And how does that...
How long? 40 years.
4 years?
40 years.
Okay, so we're going to be paying this $12 million loan. Is that what it was?
12.23, yes. Where the loan cost rate is 1.87%.
So for the next 40 years, we're going to be paying
yes.
a monthly fee that's in the base rate?
That's correct.
And it won't be going anywhere until everybody else here is dead, right?
That's a pretty fair assumption.
Okay. So that's in the specific base rate.
It's in the there should be, and we're, and you heard Tom say it a couple of times, should be no increase to the base rate.
Right. Okay. Second question is concerning the construction schedule. Is there a place that you have listed on a monthly basis what streets you're going to be working on at what date?
We've tried that. We've run into some issues, or the contractor has, where they had to move around a little bit. But I'll defer that to the contractor.
Yeah. So, go ahead. Well, we originally decided that we would start up in Zone 1, which on the map there, if you look, would be the upper right-hand portion, that salmon-colored area there, and work our way down through that. And so our goal is for this construction season, we're about halfway down through that. We have hit some areas where we've hit rock. And so we've had to kind of move the crews around a little bit. So we kind of made a little bit of a change and started back at the bottom. So it'd be the far left, upper left side of that map. And are working our way back up to where we left off last season. So that's kind of what the goal is. We are currently, with this new idea that we've got, we're currently putting together a new schedule that we'll be submitting to the project management team here. And with that information, they can then take it and get the information to you guys on. I don't think we'll ever be able to just say exactly which street will be on certain days just because of production rates change. We're on average getting around 500 to 600 linear feet of mainline in per day, Monday through Friday. So, you know, we can get pretty close. So we'll do our best to get you dates on exact streets, but, you know, it'll maybe be more general areas as opposed to certain streets, but we'll do our best to get you that information.
Bob? I try to post, we meet weekly with the contractors, and we try to do, for the week of, this kind of a tentative where they're going to be and what the road closures will be. We put it out on Facebook, on Nextdoor, and if we have your email through the Constant Contact. But like Jeff said, it does kind of change.
Well, that's fine. Changes are fine.
I ran
a $50 million project for IBM for my last 10 years. So I know about project changes and everything else. All right. So what I was asking for, is there a place that I can go and find information about what particular street has been done or when will it be done? That's what I was asking for.
Yes.
So
you got that. We have your email.
Okay.
That's out on Nextdoor and Constant Contact. I try to do a week at a time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Way in the back. Yeah, there's a microphone right next to the stand right here. Would you mind? Not that I can't hear you, but I can't hear you.
My name is Jim Wallace, Lot 8, Unit 13. I have a question. You were talking about the dead trees and so forth. At one time, there was a suggestion that they... homeowners might be able to get some type of relief and for the cost of removing those trees. Did that ever come to fruition?
Yes. We had a $250,000 grant from the state of California to help reimburse property owners for the removal of trees, and we have used all of that money. We've had I recall about 800 property owners who applied for the funds.
I know I applied for it and sent two follow-up letters and never heard anything back.
Same
on
here.
It's covered.
Then
I would appreciate either if you did well dry
you need
or whatever.
To, in that case, you either need to talk with Tony Adela or Thomas Hine.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
John Lynch, Lot 115, 16 years part-time, flatland or whatever they call it now, I'm not sure. Just a quick question for Mazingo, and is it MC Engineering?
MCI, yes.
MCI, what is the obligation for paving the you know, your entrance pits, exit pits, trenches, your HMA? What are the limits after you remove the cutback? You know, that sort of thing. Or when are you doing it?
It depends on how far we get into the roadway, but there's a county standard that we have to abide by when paving back.
Right.
So basically it says if we get into the roadway a certain amount, that once we put our initial 18-inch wide trench back, that we grind and repair a 27-inch wide strip alongside of it, like a T-grind, if
right,
you will.
T-trench, T-trench, and then an excess.
Yes, exactly.
Will that be done before the winter? You know, cut back with the heat.
Yes.
Turns this block.
Yes, we are planning on having everything that we currently have just cut back, and that we will repaved before the cold months start.
Okay. And just a second question: once it's all, not to MCM or Mazingo in general, the board, when it is completed, the whole system is put in. We have a brand new system. Does this invite an outside water agency to say, hey, let's purchase this? Is it better for Calaveras County Water to say, hey, now that the infrastructure's been put in, is that better for everybody? Can you do that? You know, just rather than having a small water district, are they going to...
That's a very appropriate question. In fact, there's a push in California right now
to
remove small water companies and have them consolidate. We're already a customer of Calaveras County Water District, and we purchase almost half our water from them. For us to be able to do that, we had to have in place then the infrastructure to do so, which we did. We also paid near $2 million in capacity connection fees. And in order to move the rest of Blue Lake Springs water, say, into Calaveras County Water District control, we'd have to pay an additional $3 or $4 million in consumption fees. So financially, we're better where we are. And we've looked at this fairly extensively. There aren't a lot of water companies around that are interested. Most of them, when you go east from where we are, are smaller than we are. And actually, as you get down closer to Angel's Camp, they're also smaller than here. And so at this moment, we have not heard any overtures from Calaveras County and their offer to purchase us. Sir, I don't know where you went. I hope that answers your question. Other questions?
Yeah, they have to pay the loan.
Hi, I'm Erin Aitzman. I just purchased a house here about a year ago. Is this working?
Okay. Yeah, it sure is.
Real close. So with the new water project, I understand the homeowners are supposed to pay from the street to the house. And my question is, two questions actually. Ballpark figure about what's that going to cost so we can budget for it. And secondly, will the water company be in contact with us about what's the process to get that going?
A ballpark figure, about $15 a foot, and that's from the plumbers. We have a list of plumbers that we can provide to you that we've already spoken to about the project. In fact, we're going to take all the plumbers that we know and bring them into one room and show them what we're doing, because the last couple of days, one of them in Ernst installing a hookup between the meter and the residence broke the lateral, which is the part that we put in from the main line up to the property. It's driven more by how far you have to go. And it's we want to ensure that if you get a local plumber, they know exactly what we expect of them. And we're going to exercise oversight as far as the work that's being done. We're going to provide a pressure release valve for you. It sounds like a gift, but you're paying for them anyway. And that way, every meter will have one, and you can regulate the pressure that goes into your own home.
I'd like to say, too, that each of you involved in the project that has to hook up to the new parts of the project received a location sheet, which locates where the new service is going to go. It has your old service on there, your old service box, in some cases behind the home. some cases in front. And if you didn't receive one, we have Rick here and we have Carissa here to make sure that you get one. And if you have any problems with that location that was put there, please let us know so we can make the changes before the pipe gets put into the street. Because when they put the pipe in the street, they put a saddle on that for that service. So anybody that has any questions about that, where their service is going to be, and if they want to make any changes, now's the time to do it.
Thank you very much.
If the new and old service box locations are the same, will you just go ahead and hook it up, or do we still have to have a plumber to hook it up?
You still have to have a plumber. Most of the locations in the street are going to be close to your old box, your old service box. So it will be a short distance, but still, I mean, you could do it yourself if you want, but that's, you're taking a risk when you do that. Maybe not everybody is, but you know, having a licensed contractor is probably the best way to go because you're protected in case of any failure down the road.
Other questions?
Is there a map available that shows where the blue pipe is going to be installed?
Yes, it's here. There's one right here.
Is that the one over here?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Yeah, yes, sir.
Question about the existing boxes. Ours is at the back of the lot, not up the street. So are you going to remove all of those boxes in the future?
Yes, we're going to leave the lines, the old lines, hot until everybody connects.
Right.
And then when that happens, we're going to come in and remove the old service boxes.
When someone asks a question, could you please repeat it? Because we can't hear anything in the back.
Okay. The question had to do with if you currently have the service line in the back of your property, will the water company come in and eventually move and remove some of the lines and the old box? And the answer is yes. Any other questions? No. Well, listen, I thank you for coming. Every year I thank you for your patience. I want to do that again. You've been very patient with us. We appreciate it. And for the third and final time, please fill out the little document. You're tired of hearing this, I know. For your email address and the little survey we have. And and if you have questions, some people don't like to ask questions in public. And you want to come up and ask the question, you can do so now. Thank you so much for coming. Yes, just over on the table here.
So it could probably be done, maybe, but I don't know what legal ramps. Maybe Andrew would have a better.
Yeah, I'm perking up in here.
Hi. Do you have a schedule? I'm on Russell Drive. Can we get the plumber to hook up whatever we need to hook up?
Yeah, as soon as you want.
Are we done? What are we?
Yeah, almost done, but we still have some work to do to put in some regulators, and then the line has to be charged. We have to put in main regulators. The line will be charged with water and sanitized utilities. So it's going to be, we're figuring around the beginning of July that you'll be able to
I advise you to get a lot of it because I get jello.
Every year I get two. We have your water box.
It's only
a
couple of feet away.
But
I didn't know at that point that we would be doing
part-time almost for about 20 years. So I thought
we can do it as soon as July.
Well, I'll let you know. You'll let us know.
I'll send a letter out.
My freshman year.
I have sort of had the impression, based on what I thought of the process, that we didn't do that until the entire system was done. That's not true. We can hook up. We can hook up pretty soon.
That map has expected to be completed. That map was a little.
But you'll notify the specific homeowners when they're able to do that.
Right, and we'll tell you. You know the. The kind of pipe we'd like you to use and all that.
Would you like us to restrict our choices of a plumbing contractor to the list you publish?
Oh,
no.
Anybody, and I advise you to get bids.
Okay, great.
Fire hydrant. Love it. Nice and close. When will they be operable?
There's four of them that have already are.
On Russell?
On Russell. Because they're hooked up to CCWD pipes.
Oh.
They are. The map, we got the map over here that shows where they are.
Okay, all right. And does Russell get well water or Calaveras County?
Russell will be getting well water. And I know a lot of people don't like well water because it would be positive. We're working on that.
Yes, because we got this mess in our house, and we're trying to decide whether we want a water filtering system or something for the house, because the water coming in, I mean, it changes everything, colors, and it's kind of funny.
I know. So, well, we're looking into blending our water with CCWD water. Which is soft water. It's river water. Ours is in the ground. And the ground, it picks up all the minerals, and that's why you have to deposit. We're trying to work on a plan to blend water with that. And if it's chemically feasible to do it, we will. So that'll minimize some of that deposit.
Yeah, because it's all over faucets. We just had everything replaced, and, you know,
it's hard to get that.
Yep, and on your finishes, it changes things. So, you know, we thought, well, we put a water filtration at the, you know, as it comes in the house, so we eliminate that. But we'll see how it goes.
See how it goes, because it may not be. We're going to try.
Okay.
We can't make it better.
Good. Terrific. Thank you.
So, Dave, I just got a question that you might jot down. The guy has two lots, and he's wondering if the billing process. I
apologize if you don't see
that. One bill for two lots, or if people with multiple lots can just get one bill. When we go to the new billing,
we have.
Hey, Dave.
Hi.
It's Doug Nunes. I wanted to introduce myself so you know me next time you see me.
I don't recognize you. You've lost a lot of weight.
100 pounds.
Wow. Good job. First day.